This is Phil Farrand. And I am driving home. Okay, I'm getting closer to being able to figure out how to put the recorder down on the foam pad, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We're getting there. So this has been an interesting week. Oh, you know what I forgot to do last week? I can't even remember what I was talking about last week, but whatever it was, I wanted to just say a couple of extra words last week about the upcoming election. And it was really coming down to that I had heard over and over a phrase being used by some of the top people on the Republican side, and that is surge, that they were looking for a surge. And I have chatted about repeating the phrase that I heard from someone else, that we've got to get above the margin of fraud. So I thought that was all very interesting, and I was going to say that I expected that either it would not be close, and if it was close, that likely Kamala Harris was going to win. But what, you know, I was hoping for is there would be some kind of surge that would get above the margin of fraud. And in that case, you want to get the stuff from the rest of the stuff being loaded. Just a second. Meetings are all finished! Exclamation point. I asked Mom when she wanted to load up the rest of the stuff, but I think she was going down for a nap, and so I don't know what's happening there. Exclamation point. Heading home now. Exclamation point. So we've had a development with Lynette's mom that I'll tell you about here in a second. Anyways, I was hoping for a surge, but I gotta say, the election surprised me, and frankly, restored in part my faith in the American populace. Because the fact that you could just take someone who everybody agreed up until 5 minutes ago was not a very good vice president, and then should just go, ta-da! And suddenly, she was the most popular person ever, and she was such a good and capable leader. I was like, what? Have we lost our minds? And then it wasn't like, you know, she just hit the ground running, but we'll talk about that in a minute. So, you know, the fact that there was a surge and the fact that it came from so many quarters, that's very encouraging. You know, that people were like, yeah, we got to do something different here. And in spite of the fact that Trump may have a lot of rough edges that they don't necessarily like, they were able to get beyond that and say, okay, I may not like Trump, but look at the people around him, you know. So we'll get back to that in a minute, because this is going to be fascinating. I mean, it's really going to be fascinating. So work is going fine. We're, you know, working on our priorities, getting things squared away, you know, setting things up, knocking them down, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The costuming is going fine. Writing is going fine. I'm right on track for where I need to be with book 22. So that all seems to be happening. I just started chapter 15, I think. 15 or 16, and, you know, that all seems to be fine. I know what is supposed to happen in the latter part of the book. I don't know all the ins and outs of it, but I know what's supposed to happen, and I know the storylines that I'm going to try to get wrapped up and like that. So, you know, I'm in better shape than I have been on some of these books. So, and costumes are going fine. I'm working on pretend that you're a time traveler. I have about 4 weeks left on that, but I'm in pretty good shape. I'm working on an infinity mirror now, that I'm going to strap on the sound system on the back to kind of obscure the fact it's a sound system. I've done my tests on that, and I've got kind of an idea of how all that's going to happen. I spent probably 45 minutes last night. I had taken the atomic whirl symbol, you know, the one where it's like an atom and it's got a nucleus, and then there's three elliptical orbits around that. And I was trying to figure out, okay, going inside and outside of each orbit, what pattern did I need to run to run lights that way so that I could then animate those lights, LED lights, and do a chase thing with the lights? Because you get a string of individually addressable LEDs, and you get something like WLED, the little application, WLED, and you can do all sorts of animations and things with it. So I think I've about got that worked out. I'm still twiddling with a little of the details. The physical infinity mirror itself is pretty straightforward, because you just need lights around the outside. It's a circle. And there's a regular mirror on the bottom, and then a one-way mirror on top of that. And then between those two things, you put the LED lights. And then if the LED lights are chasing, then, you know, it looks like it's going down a long way inside it. And it's bigger on the inside than the outside. That's the whole point. So that should be fun. If there was enough space, which there isn't, it would be fun to, you know, if it was thicker, you can do things like, if you have a box and you put an infinity mirror in it, you can do things where it looks like if you look inside the box, it's actually a vertical shaft that you can make it look like the ladder's going all the way down the side. And you can do all sorts of really interesting things, but I'm not doing that. I'm just doing the swirly lights. So that's fun. In other news, Lynette's mom did die this morning. We have been expecting it. She was to the point where she wasn't really eating anything, and they had put her on constant morphine to keep her comfortable. And so she did pass this morning. Lynette had written me last night and, you know, had talked about that it had gotten difficult, and we talked, and I told her, I said, sweetie, do you want me to come in? I said, I can get some clothes on, come in. She said, no. She said, I'm fine. And so I had mentioned to her, just a little longer, sweetie, just a little longer, and then reunion, you know. She's been always missing her husband. When Papa died back in 2016, I think he died in 2016. She's really missed him since then. And so she's looked forward to seeing him again. And it was interesting because I had responded to Nat and asked her if she wanted me to go ahead and come home. And she said no. And I had a thought that I should write something else to her, and then I thought, no, I've already written it, it's fine. But the thought that had come to mind last night, before Lynette's mom died this morning, was to write her and say, weeping endures for the night, but joy comes in the morning. And I told Lynette that this morning. She went, oh, you know. So it was interesting. Sometimes, after all this time, I don't do what I'm supposed to do, unfortunately. So, you know, there you go. Anyways, so yeah, all is well. And like I was saying at the beginning of this, I do think the deep state is still powerful. I do think we haven't seen the end of this. I still think there's a huge battle to be fought. But this was a pretty significant victory on Tuesday. And so we'll see where this goes. And there are a couple of things that I would put as caveats on everything I set up to the election about this. And that one of them is that while there are many forces that are all allied going in the same direction, they aren't completely unified. And they're all kind of doing their own thing, and it's all moving towards destruction because it's all based on greed and power and all that sort of thing. But it is still true that they all aren't tightly aligned and planning things. And so they get coordinated because there are other forces whispering to them, but they don't necessarily follow everything the forces are whispering to them, so there's all that disunity potential. And, you know, frankly, because of the way they go about things and because of the way they conduct themselves, in terms of true bravery, these systems that are doing all this stuff really aren't that brave. They have temporary power, and they're willing to use that power and exploit it. But if anything comes after them directly, they'll crumble. So it'll be very interesting to see how this all works out. I'm encouraged that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is already like, okay, yes, there are whole departments at the FDA that we have to dismantle. It's like, yeah, go get them, buddy. And he said, and I'm the person to do it because I know. And so it's like, go. It's just going to be fascinating. But what is more fascinating to me is some of the maps that have been come out. The New York Times put together a map, and I'm sure you've seen it, showing the shifts towards the Republican Party in the counties across the United States. And it's unbelievable how many counties shifted Republican in this election. And about the only place the shifts didn't occur was like on the extreme left coast, which is really fascinating. The other map that was really fascinating, if I remember the exact representation, it was something like, well, how many counties did Kamala Harris outperform Biden in 2020? And that answer is zero. Zero. You know, they went over and hit the button to put the counties up on the map and nothing comes up. Which, you know, again, kind of establishes to me some hope that people weren't willing just to do what they were told. So, you know, that they're willing to say, yeah, no, she never received any votes for anything. And the fact was they weren't all just sitting there and saying, well, I guess this is who we're supposed to vote for. You know, that a bunch of Republicans or a bunch of Democrats, a bunch of Latino voters, a bunch of African-American voters, a bunch of women all said, yeah, no, we're not doing this. So, you know, interesting. It's very interesting, the whole coalition that Trump was able to pull together for this election. And honestly, depending on how these next 4 years go, you know, if he is able to truly accomplish something profound, put America back on a stable energy threshold, use tariffs to raise additional government funding, cut taxes, I mean, it's land almighty. Which, you know, everybody kind of gets weirded out about tariffs and the fact, but I finally heard Ben Shapiro say, look, yes, let's put tariffs on China because they cheat. You know, they cheat, period. So let's put tariffs on them. And I agree. I don't see anything wrong with that at all. You know, everybody talks about, oh, we need free trade because that, you know, that's not going to cause us to be isolationists and all that kind of thing. But America has taken it on the chin for so long with people stealing our manufacturing jobs and subsidizing stuff and making it impossible for us to compete with prices and, you know, hiring children to build stuff so that it was really cheap and they could sell it really cheap. And none of those things are things that we really should be promoting. And so if that means we slap tariffs on things and we slow down those sales, make it harder for China and make it easier for manufacturers here in the United States to build a good product for a reasonable price, yeah, that seems like a good idea. I'm getting my mail. One of the things that came up this week, just towards the end, I mean, I came across this like on the Monday of this week, just before the election. And it's just astonishing. It's just astonishing. The level of incompetence on the Kamala Harris team, they're apparently they felt like, oh, we've got to do a podcast with a Muslim podcaster because, you know, we really need to shore up that vote. We got to do that. And so he had told them, well, I want to talk about Gaza. And the Kamala Harris people were like, nope, can't talk about that. Nope, we're not talking about Gaza. And he was like, well, okay, what? Well, she's willing to talk about, I think they said it was something like having to take off your shoes when you get on a plane. That was as close as she was going to get to the whole terrorist issue or anything like that. And it's just, we'll talk about that. And the Muslim podcaster said that he thought, well, you know, okay, if it just turns out really bad, I don't necessarily have to put this thing up on the web. And so he starts talking to her. And, you know, then he's trying to kind of bring this topic up that they had agreed to. And she's not responding. So the podcaster's name was Kareem Rama, host of the popular Subway Takes, which boasts almost a million combined viewers on Instagram and TikTok, made the decision to... Okay, so he's trying to bring up this business, ultimately agreed to the terms. But then in the interview, instead of talking about having to, you know, people take off their shoes on airplanes, she decided she wanted to talk about another hot take. And the hot take that she wanted to talk about was bacon is a spice. Bacon is a spice. That's what she wanted to talk about to a Muslim podcaster. Muslims don't eat pork. It's like, what? And, you know, I guess on the podcast, he said, I don't know. He said he pushed back in the unaired interview. And he was really, like, taken aback. And she just kept pressing in. Well, think about it. It's pure flavor. And then he paused the interview to tell her that he doesn't eat pork. And he attempted to redirect Harris to the agreed-upon topic of taking off shoes mid-flight. But she doubled down with another food take, which was the Times said was on the advice of a staffer praising anchovies on pizza. And Rama said, well, I'm 100% unsure on both of those. And what happened is he just ultimately chose not to air the interview, fearing it would upset the Muslim community. And he said, it was so complicated because I'm Muslim and there's something going on in the world that 100% of Muslims care about. Rama said, and then they made it worse by talking about anchovies. So, yeah. So apparently he had also interviewed Tim Walz earlier, and Tim Walz wanted to talk about gutter maintenance. What? And we were this close to getting that elected as president. What? You know, and that I was, that's what I was really concerned about. I was concerned that, like, what? Is America really going to vote for this? I was just flabbergasted at how dedicated some people were to this idea. That she was qualified. And everybody was walking around going, oh, yeah, she's the most qualified person that we've ever... What? I mean, I just heard today that... Remember the Hunter Biden laptop? Remember the letter? 51 people, intelligence officers, signed this letter that said that the Hunter Biden laptop was Russian disinformation. Apparently, 9 of those people... also signed a letter declaring that Kamala Harris was a very qualified leader and she was obviously the best choice. Oh, man. What in the world? Somebody has described this as bizarro world. Now, I do think that Ben Shapiro had some of the funniest stuff when he was talking about the election. I mean, what a really funny line. I was watching the Daily Wire's thing, and they had all their troops there, including Jordan Peterson. And when it finally got to the place where it looked like it was pretty sure that Trump was going to win, Ben Shapiro, he really started getting happy, and he just started going off on all these riffs. And Jordan Peterson at one point looked at him, and he said... well, he kind of used a little bit of a profanity. He said, you're scary when you're happy, and everybody laughed. But one of the things Ben Shapiro said, he said, I got to tell you, he said, this whole time, this whole thing was going on, he said, there were a couple of times when I felt like saying to God, okay, this season of Trump, whoever the writers are, this is just crazy. You guys have gone way too far. This is not believable at all. He said, but... God really comes through with the endings, he said. Because this is an unbelievable ending for this season on Trump. You know, it's that whole thing I've been saying that I heard someone else say. This season on America. Holy cow. And then we have a new season that's starting in January. And, oh, man. This is going to be so interesting to watch. It's just going to be so interesting. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it.